with episode 15
of
the Clear Eyes Full Shelves podcast. And it's just Laura and I this time. I hope that everyone can deal with that.
Yeah, I hope you guys are okay with just listening to us, too.
Listening to us. In this episode, we wanted to discuss something that keeps kind of popping up. keeps popping up in the book world, and also I think it crosses, the television world and pretty much any sort of media or artistic. We were even talking about it in terms of music and that sort of thing. Is in the case of books, but in general, sort of consumer expectations of whether it's series or of what a piece of art is supposed to be versus what they get. And this has definitely, in the book world, come up a lot lately with the end of the Divergent series. People being very, very unhappy with the end of Allegiant to the point of some really extreme behavior, I think. we're not really talking about that extreme behavior, but more in the dissatisfaction of readers in terms of the time that they've invested in that particular series. But it's, it's also come up in the context of the Just One Day, Just One Year duology of books. Sorry about my dog. His little sister, I guess she's his big sister because she's 12 and he's 3, but he's like twice her size, his little sister has been beating him up today, and he is having a moment. And I just can't seem to get him calmed down because his sister is a pain in the ass. I would not want Saoirse for my sibling. I'm just saying. I love that dog, but she's a tough taskmaster.
You don't want any siblings.
That's true.
Siblings freak you out.
They totally freak me out. But
you would totally be the boss of the siblings, though.
Well, yeah, that's the only way I can sort of handle things anyway. But anyway, that was in the terms of the Just One Day, Just One Year duet. A lot of people were frustrated because they felt like they'd been promised one thing and got another thing. It's also interesting as another popular series, the Marie Lou's Legend series is just wrapped up.
Oh, okay.
And it's really interesting.
I haven't read that series.
I read the first book and I really didn't care for it, but it's very popular and people love that series. And it's interesting seeing the contrast because it and the end of the Divergent series came out really close together, like maybe within 2 weeks of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the reviews I've seen of Champion, the third book in the Legends series, have been like, man, this is how you end a series, and this is how you do your characters justice. So it's sort of interesting, almost as like this subtext of this dialogue, like an internal dialogue with readers between like the differences and the endings of the Divergent series and the Legends series, mm-hmm. and how people feel like so satisfied with that series, and so many people feel so unsatisfied with the end of the Divergent series.
Right.
It's sort of fascinating since I don't like either series.
Yeah.
It's sort of interesting to sort of watch with some detached interest because, I think those feelings are real. But with that said, at the same time, series also, whether it's series or,
any kind of
art. Yeah, the creator of that work also has an obligation to do what they feel is right for the work as well. And so there's like this rub. I'm rubbing my hands together as a visual effect here. I can there's this rub between those two competing needs. And then inserted into all that is the way that so much of the marketing of, books and television and movies really tries to give, the fans, some sort of, feeling of ownership of these things. I think the Divergent series is probably one of the best examples because when the second book in that, Insurgent, came out, they were inviting, they had bloggers manage factions, a la the factions in the book.
Uh-huh.
And we're having competitions to see how many people could get other people to join, I'm doing air quotes, which I don't have a noise for to go into the microphone, to join their factions, really sort of giving people this, like, odd ownership over the marketing. So it's like, there's also this, like, weird slip, it's like more of a, I'm sliding back and forth. This is why we don't do a vlog. It'd be like me doing weird hand motions.
You look like you're hippie dancing.
I know, and I don't hippie dance. Like, I have
an aversion to hippie dancing.
Yes, but there's this sort of sliding kind of thing that happens, you know, when you are asking fans to take, to really take ownership of a series' success, which is what they were doing with that marketing campaign for the second book in that, that series.
Yeah, you're making your fans active participants.
I understand why fans would feel like there was a certain level of entitlement. Even if it's not necessarily accurate, I can understand how they would feel that way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I really want to make I want to make sure I, like, parse that really carefully, because I don't want someone to be like, Sarah said that fans have a right to have books written exactly how they want them written, because that's not true. But I do think you can't
discount how they're feeling.
How they're feeling, especially when you build marketing campaigns around having the fans really be the spokespeople for the product. Like, that's where I think it gets really sticky. And also just in general what marketing promises, like with the Just One Day, Just One Year duology, the marketing, Penguin said, Just One Year is, and I feel like I'm picking on this series and I don't need it, but they said, Just One Year picks up where Just One Day left off. Just One Day leaves off in a very critical scene that does not happen in Just One Year until the very last page.
Right.
That is not...
is not picking up where it left off.
Penguin lied in their marketing. They chose to lie in their marketing to encourage us, you know, the sort of... the series fever, you know?
Right.
So that people could find out what happens next, and they don't find out what happens next to the last page. So I understand why people feel frustrated, and they feel mad, and I get that. And it sucks. It's not fair, you know, for anyone in that situation, except for probably, you know, whoever did the marketing of Penguin, who's still getting, you know.
Right, and then there's been blowback against the author for the fact that, over the fact that Penguin lied and led them to expect something that
wasn't
was not in the book, you know, because it's really easy to just point the finger at the author and be like, you lied to me, which is not what happened here.
No, it's not at all.
It's Penguin that did that, you know.
But most readers, you know, they just see the name on the cover of the book, not not the imprint on the, did you just tweet me?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I told you I was going to.
Yeah, I just thought you were being sarcastic.
No.
Sorry, that was really funny. Okay, I will tell you guys what Laura just tweeted. At Sarah S. Moon.
I don't really know unquote, what.
New
why can't
policy,
you just edit this out?
No revealing books that take place from the point of view of a pimp. Me. Oh, come on, Sarah. It's hard out there for a pimp. Exclamation point. I'm not editing that out because that's pretty hilarious.
I thought it was rather clever of me, to be honest.
anyway. All right, sorry about that there. But I think it's interesting, and I've definitely had those sort of, like, that frustrated feeling with the Just One Year thing. Even though I actually liked that book on its own, but the thing that I took away from that had more to do with that the marketing was so
misleading.
Deceptive.
Yeah.
That's what I think about when I think about that series.
Right.
And that sucks because I think that's a really interesting series and she did some really brave things with that series.
Right.
And that's
The marketing really should have been about how both characters reach a certain point as opposed to,
and that day they spent together as a catalyst for that.
As opposed to what it was.
A romantic duet of novels with a sweeping romance. That's not what those books are.
Yeah, not at all.
And I think that's also, in a sense, what the Divergent series and also has some of that as well, because I have read the first two books. which I haven't read the third one, but I know what happens because I totally read all the spoilers online. Because I wasn't going to read the third book. But, you know, that the first two books of that series were really set up. You know, it's an adventure story, so there's a lot of sort of your adventure story stuff and your dystopian stuff and your flimsy world building and all that. But, or lack of world building entirely. But there's also in that series, the first two books are very much you're sort of setting up your kind of three act romantic arc. As well.
Yeah.
So, like, the first book is the characters getting together. The second book is, you know, they're together, and then they're kind of, things get rocky. So, like, you sort of, you know, the third book, you would come to expect, you know, their reconciliation.
Right.
You know, like, them figuring out a way to, because it's, and what I think readers, when they see those, even though they don't say, oh, this is a three-act romantic story arc, I think people, because story structure is a, you know, there's only so many stories out there that are told. I can't remember what there are. Like, there's like 12 or 20. Right. Like, there's not very many,
but
really.
You do learn just like learn from English class, too. They teach you certain things about how there are arcs and patterns and things.
And as readers, and we do see those patterns, even though we're not like, oh, this is a hero's journey. I think we recognize that and start to have expectations adjusted based on these markers we recognize. And then when that doesn't happen, and it seems sort of out of the blue, as opposed to, like, I see what you're doing. You're, like, subverting this trope.
Right.
Or, you know, you're subverting this character archetype. But when it's, like, and boom! Someone gets hit by a bus! Like, which, that's, like, my, seriously, like, that's my, like, favorite thing in literary fiction, where there'll be, like, a strong romance in literary fiction. It happens all the time. Like, and then the couple finally gets together at the end, so they have that three-act, you know, romantic arc. Meet, something splits them apart, third act they come together, then there'll be an epilogue where someone gets hit by a bus.
Yeah.
Like, it happens all the time. Or
cancer or something.
Or, like, something really devastating happens so they don't get to be happy, because, like, literary fiction is all about misery.
Yeah, they don't want people to be happy.
Yeah. And because the human condition is misery, Laura. Sorry, I'm awful. But, I mean, I think, you know, that's like, I mean, man, like, that's, I get, there are so many books, like, I Google to make sure, like, you know, when I see, like, sweeping romance, and it's, like, in, like, it's sort of shelved as, like, literary fiction, I'm like, Google, you know, make sure no one gets blown up, you know, hit by a bus, or blown up, you know, like, oh, man,
it happens a lot.
It's
a thing that people use to kind of, it yanks people emotionally.
It can be manipulative.
Yeah, it's very manipulative.
I mean, I'm not saying every book needs to have a happy ending, but I'm saying, like, we do adjust our expectations when we start to know, like, when we start to see the pattern.
Right.
And when it seems out of the realm of what we know, like, the characters and the setting and all those kinds of things, I think that people, I understand why they get mad. And I particularly understand, like, with the dystopia thing, you know, the YA dystopia is definitely kind of, I don't like to say things are formulaic because it sounds like a negative thing, but there's a formula that people are, you know, with these trilogies, people are accustomed to seeing. And I don't necessarily think everyone needs to adhere to that formula. But when the formula is altered and it seems unexpected because it's followed the formula for the bulk of the story, that's where it's, I think that people get frustrated. You know, I'm reading the third book in the All These Things I've Done series, which is actually, I think the series name is Birthright. That's what it is. Gabrielle Zevins. Series, which I really, really love, and, I'm on the third book, and it's so interesting reading the third book in a series, sort of in light of, like, all the discussion about series in general that's been happening, and, like, I have, my expectations of that third book are really, have less to do with, like, who Anya will end up with, and more with, I will be very angry if the Anya that's been, like, growing into this, like, really interesting, like, independent, sort of strong, wise character, if there's something that happens in that series that, like, makes that sort of crumble.
All of that growth. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be really
frustrating.
Like, even if, like, it means, like, she's not going to end up with, like, you know, this one character or, you know, I feel like with that particular, but it's interesting, like, even, because I actually thought about, well, what are my, because I was doing, we were planning on doing this podcast, and I was starting reading that book, and I was like, what are my expectations of this third book? I was like, well, I don't, like, care who she ends up with. Like, that's, right. like, an irrelevant part. It's not, it's an important part of the story, like, sort of her, there's, like, dude she's dated sort of off and on in the series, and there's actually another boy character I really like that she hasn't dated, so right. I'm like, come on, get with Teo! He's cool! He has a chocolate farm! Like, he makes hot chocolate really well. Like, yeah, he wields a machete.
Really hard to beat that.
He has a machete. He taught her how to use a machete. Like, he's super cool. I mean, I think they're just friends. Like, I assume that's where they're, that's, you know, I don't think that there's anything headed in any other direction. But, yeah, I was just like, oh, you know, the thing that with that particular scene is, like, if that, because I really like where she sort of built this character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, and she's had to go through really shitty things. Like, she's been in prison twice. And she's, like, trying to start a legitimate business because her family is, like, they're mobbed up.
Right.
And, you know, so there's just this stuff that she's trying to do that is really brave. And if that gets kind of mushy, like, and if she's not, I would rather, yeah, if that gets mushy and if she has to compromise that in order to get sort of a happily ever after, I will be livid. Like, livid. And you know I'm all about the happy ever after, but, like, I will be furious if, like, any of that is compromised.
If it compromises her character.
I really will. Yeah. Like, I really, really will. Like, I, to the point where I was like, ooh, now I'm nervous because I thought about this too much.
Well, and I think it's a really tricky thing to balance. I mean, the whole thing is a complicated issue because, you know, certain, you know, the author wants to tell a certain story, and they want the character to reach a certain point. And, you know, they have the creative license to right. do that, but, you know, sometimes, like you were saying, as a reader, we've learned to identify certain markers and things, you know,
yeah.
so we can see if it's following a certain formula. And it sometimes that can go really well because people are just like, oh, I love being surprised.
Yeah. And,
in some cases, I feel like in what is that series called? By Patrick Ness, that trilogy?
Chaos Walking.
The Chaos Walking trilogy by Patrick Ness, which the first book is called The Knife of Never Letting Go. I thought he did some really inventive things with that series. I mean, there were still certain, you have a protagonist who, like, has to go on the run and learn things about life and learn
That's
how
like
to grow up.
That's kind of a hero's journey
yeah,
type story,
kind of
right?
a hero yeah. journey kind of thing. But at the same time, he deals with a lot of really complicated issues, difficult issues, and he packs it into this YA trilogy.
Those books are, like, this big.
Yes, and they are impossible to put down when you start them, so. But I mean, but I think he does some things that are brave, and some people are like, I'm never going to forgive you for this thing, Patrick Ness, and you guys who have read the book know what I am talking about.
I know
about.
The thing, that's why I haven't
yeah,
read the series.
Yeah, and people are like, I will never forgive you for this, but at the same time, it was...
that's why I have the thing, is
it
why
was
I haven't read it.
In a
yeah.
way, I don't know that he did it to be manipulative, because yeah. I honestly think it was an important thing to happen, for the character, Todd, who's the main character, to kind of learn certain things.
He
you
needed
know,
to suffer more.
Yeah, there's that. There's a lot of suffering in this. It's almost kind of out of control in some ways. I think that that series is actually really important in some ways, in my opinion. So
we gave those, that series to Luke's classroom.
Oh, the whole trilogy?
Yeah. And I know they're in constant circulation.
Yeah.
Like, they're really, really popular. And, like, the kids get pretty, like, emotionally beat up reading them. Which
I was emotionally beat up.
You know, I think it's, like, kind of a satisfying thing sometimes.
Right. So. Like, at the end of the first book, the very end of it is very, like, you're just horrified at the end of this book. Horrified. Just that, like, and after everything you've already been through emotionally when reading this book and that ending happens. I mean, I don't even know how people dealt with it when if they had to wait for the second book to come out, because all the books were out when I read this series. But there's if I had to wait a year, oh my god, I don't even like.
You know, I only had to wait a few days between the second Hunger Games book and the last Hunger Games book.
Right.
And I think if I had to wait a year
yeah.
in between, like, those books, I would have lost my mind. I would have been, like, a mess. I mean, because... And I don't know, I think my expectations might have been, like... Because I know some people are unhappy with the way that series... I love the way that series ended, to be honest. Like, I really
liked it. Yeah, I thought it was appropriate.
My favorite is the second book, but I thought the ending of that series made so much sense for all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I always find that very satisfying when it's like, okay, so these people are at the place that makes sense for what I know about these people.
Right.
But... Man, like, if there's some series, like, I hate waiting. Like, the Raven Boys series, which each book is really neatly wrapped up. Like, I feel like they, like, even though you need to read that first book to really understand the second book,
right.
Each book sort of has, like, a really nicely beginning, middle, and end that sort of stands on its own, even though it... needs to be with the previous book.
Yeah, that's like an over
Like The Dream Thieves was a really satisfying book on its own.
Yes.
And it was a very satisfying book in the relationship to the Raven Boys.
Right.
And so, like, I hate waiting for Maggie's books when they come out, because Maggie's books are so awesome. But I don't hate waiting for them in, like, the sense of, like, sort of, like, crazy what's gonna happen thing. And I kind of appreciate that. Actually, though, with her Shiver series, I did kind of get a little stressed out, so I'm lying.
Yeah, I could see why you would get stressed out.
I mean, I think they came out... I think that, in my mind, the first two came out relatively close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I might have... Maybe I read the first one later than I realized or something
Well, I think the third one, though, because she did mention...
I think there was a delay.
Yeah, she did mention kind of going back and revising certain things that, you know, didn't work for her. So
yeah, and that was one of the things we wanted to talk about was we went and heard Maggie talk at the University Bookstore in Seattle last month, and she talked about writing Forever, which is the third book, and her Wolves of Mercy Falls series, which we talk about a lot, because it can relate to a lot of things. Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and she talked about when she wrote the first version of Forever, the third book. She started just, like, she was, like, super stressed out because the second book did really well, and she wanted to make sure that, like, she ended the series in a way that was satisfying for...
The readers.
All the audience. Readers, yeah. And, like, what, like, here's something for the people who like da-da-da!
She's just like, oh, maybe something. I should put this in because this is what they are expecting and what they will want.
Yeah.
As opposed to what she thought was the best thing for the characters. I personally really love that trilogy, and I really like how she ended it.
And
was really pleased with how she did it.
I really thought the ending was really solid. Like, yeah. It's a series ending that was really satisfying to me, because it was another one of those where, like, I felt like everyone was in a good spot, and except for probably Cole and Isabel, which I wanted to know more about them.
Yeah, and we're going to! Woo!
But, I mean, really, it was a story about Sam and Grace, not Cole and Isabel, so that made sense. But, it's funny because that's actually another series, like, because that came out, like, I think that was a really common one that Twilight fans read after Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen... Folks complain.
I really hate the comparison.
I know. They have nothing in common. No, they really have nothing in common except for their, like, teen paranormal romance.
Right.
I mean, but they're so different. I mean, the writing is different. The characters are wildly different. They're just incredibly different. But it's interesting because
I mean, the level of writing skill.
Well, yes, that too. And I'm not discounting people who, like, read and enjoyed Twilight. Like, mm-hmm. That's totally fine and awesome. But it is funny because I know that I've read some really interesting reviews of the last book in the Wolves of Mercy Falls series, which are really feeling like it needed the kind of, like, like, marriage and a baby type resolution, like Twilight had.
Oh, that... I hadn't thought of that ever when reading that trilogy. This is new to me.
And actually, Maggie did a really... No, Maggie did a YouTube video, I think. I might be losing my mind, but I'm pretty sure she did a YouTube video about that particular question. And it's... Man, I'm gonna Google, but in addressing, like, that's just not somewhere she would go with her. Because she felt like those two had a lot of things to do in their lives before they could even sort of get to that point.
Right, because they're still pretty young. And it's really interesting to me... Damn, I used interesting again. Okay, I should pinch myself or something. Anyways, an author ends a book or a series, whether it's a standalone or a series, and they have ended it in a way that is satisfying to them as the creator. I find it fascinating when there are readers who are just clamoring for more.
Yeah.
I feel like Lisa Schroeder has mentioned this often with her book The Day Before, which is a wonderful verse novel.
Another book that we also mention in every podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't really see a way around it. I feel like people have really clamored for a sequel to that book. And, I feel like I read the book and I thought that the way it resolved was at the right spot for Kate and Amber, where they were as characters, but a lot of the readers really have wanted to know more and where it goes from there. And Lisa has said, well, these characters aren't really telling me what they want. I think it's up to you as the reader to decide what happens with them. But it's fascinating to me how some readers are not okay with the idea of coming up what they think is the happy ending or what they want for the ending.
It's an interesting
and I feel
thing,
like this is something that comes up a lot. I feel like I see a lot with writers being asked questions about a sequel. Like, I feel like I've seen a lot, and this is really, really interesting to me, with Sarah Oakler and Bittersweet. I feel like I've seen a lot of questions about having a sequel to Bittersweet, and I'm like, Bittersweet doesn't need a sequel. Like, in my mind, it doesn't need one. I think Bittersweet stands on its own really well, and I'm not sure what more people want out of that story. I'd be really curious if somebody wants to tell me what they're looking for, because I love that book and I was so satisfied by it and how she resolved everything.
And
so.
I wonder if part of it is, like, there's so, like, series are such an important part of the book market these days. And so I wonder if it's almost, especially if we talk about, like, the teen book market.
Right, if people have just kind of learned to expect
it. I mean, there are loads of standalones, obviously.
Right.
But, I mean, the big books tend to be trilogies or longer.
Right.
And so I almost wonder if there is this, because there are so many series and they're really driving so much of the market, if part of it has
people
more to do
with... People just
have
this expectation
what we're used
of a series?
To, yeah, like, or? It's like we're used to... It's like, oh, well, where's the next book? Like, it's almost like we forget that they're standalones.
Right.
And particularly with the teen stuff, because that's... because even when there's not series, there's a lot of, you know, interconnected novels are really... Like, it's like, okay, like, Katie McGarry writes that series for Harlequin Teen where... Each book is about different characters, but they're all interconnected characters. So you get to know these characters over, and those are wildly popular.
Right.
So even with, like, you know, if you read the first book, I have forgotten the name of
that
book.
Pushing the Limits?
Pushing the Limits.
Right.
You get to see sort of the, like, after for the characters in Pushing the Limits and Dare You To.
Right.
And then you get to see both of those a little bit in the next book. And And the same with Miranda Keneally's series. You know, they're standalones, but you get to see sort of these glimpses.
Right.
And I think that there might be something actually that has to do with, like, sort of the, like, the way the kind of market has almost impacted our expectations of what we see. Because that's, I mean, that's very different from when, you know, like even when I was
a
teenager.
Yeah, but I think sometimes in some ways I think the authors themselves... miss the characters.
And oh, I
kind
do.
Of want to.
Sarah Destin, you know, totally misses her characters.
Yeah, but Mindy little... Scott, too, in her book, she does that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when I read Live Through This,
mm-hmm.
Which is her second book, and I saw a glimpse of the main characters from Free Fall in there, I was so excited.
Yeah.
I mean, and but, Live Through This stands really well on its own.
Well, and what
I mean,
she
and, it,
does,
and it's meant to.
And what
but
she
I
does
really
and
like
what,
those glimpses.
Like Sarah Destin does,
yes.
is a little different than what like Katie McGarry does,
right.
which is has because she'll have and Morgan Matson does like what Mindy and Sarah Destin do
mm-hmm.
as well. And but with like Katie McGarry's series and some of the other ones I can think of, like these other characters actually play like. They have, like, lines of dialogue, like, multiple lines of dialogue,
uh-huh.
and they, like, you know, it's sort of almost this, it's really interesting, it's an interesting phenomenon.
That kind of
phenomenon.
Reminds me of, Essie Hinton a little bit with The Outsiders, and she did that, I feel
did
like.
Did she?
With some of her books with The Outsiders.
I've only
that
read,
was
the,
then,
I've only read
now.
The Outsiders,
yeah, they're,
so.
Because they all take place in Tulsa, and a lot of the characters are connected.
Yeah.
You know, they'll just kind of have, like, a little cameo,
yeah.
you know?
So I wonder if sort of, like, those kinds of things, you know, the sort of series-driven world, even when books are standalones, I wonder how much that's actually impacted our expectations as opposed to our, I don't know, like,
mm-hmm.
it's chicken or egg.
Yeah.
But, it's interesting to me because, and I don't know if you, I mean, how much do you see that in, like, the, like the adult market, because I know like the only series I could think of where there's kind of an uproar is like Jeanine Frost, like super trashy vampire series. It's super trashy. Her Cat and Bone series. I know. Let me say I did not get the like filthy humor of the characters' names until like last year.
I don't even know if I would get it.
It just dawned on me. And, but she wrote a spinoff series about a beloved character, like a two-book,
mm-hmm.
Like a duology, about a beloved character from that series, and, which I think I read, like, 3 pages of it or something, and, like, sent it back to the library because the narrator was so annoying. She was one of those, you know, this is a tiny tangent. But you know those narrators where they're like, they're so generic.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's almost like they're so generic so the reader can kind of like insert him or herself into the text. Like it's when that first, that really generic first person narration.
Right.
And I don't get that. Like it's always in a certain sort of book. But anyway, man, people were pissed because they felt like this character that they'd gotten to know and really like didn't get the story that he deserved, like the quality of story
mm-hmm.
and the like type, because he was a really interesting character. He was probably
right.
better than any of the main characters. And, that like, that was really interesting to me just cause like I said, I didn't read the series cause I was just like, I hate this type of narration. But that series is so bad. It's kind of like the Aliens in West Virginia series.
Oh.
You know, but for grown-ups, it's just, like, it's just so bad. And it's, like, one of those, like, this totally codependent relationship. Because you can't not, I'm glad she's ending the series next year. She's ending it a book early. Thank God. anyway. Anyway, and I was trying to think of some others that I've, like, I mean, I know the Mercy Thompson series is going to end at, I've heard it's going to end at, like, book 9 or something like that,
yeah,
9
book
or 10.
Book 7 came out last
yeah.
year, so book 8 should be out.
So it's, like, so that's, you know, winding down. And actually, the one that there was the uproar about earlier in the year was the end to the Sookie Stackhouse series.
Oh, that's right.
And I don't know, I quit reading that series.
Yeah,
a
I
long
stopped
time ago.
Reading it. I don't know. I think there's been 2 books that have come out since I stopped reading it.
I stopped reading it at
I kept reading that series a lot longer than some people do.
I think I quit that series like 3 years ago. So mm-hmm. whatever book that would, what are the, there were 13 books, I think, total.
I want to say there were.
And I think I read think, like.
I feel like I stopped at like 10.
I think I stopped around 8.
Because
I know it was past when she was dating the tiger or whatever he was.
Oh, yeah, the were-tiger. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember anything that happened really after the tiger, but I think I read books past the tiger. But I just, that was, like, so crazy. That series ended, and that series, actually, the end of that series leaked because someone got, you know how sometimes books accidentally get shipped right. early? And, which, that's actually another, okay, we're going to make a list of my pet peeves, because one of the things related to this that drives me crazy is when books get shipped early, and then authors start posting on their Tumblrs or whatever, asking people not to read the books early. Like, someone did that recently, I can't remember which book it was, and I was just like, what, you're supposed to, like, you happen to get the book early, and you're just not supposed to read it till the release date? Like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand asking people not to post spoilers about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I think that's
like,
more than reasonable.
Yeah. Or, like, asking people, like, if you're going to post a spoiler, please mark it as a spoiler.
Right. All totally reasonable things.
All reasonable requests. Not that it will stop people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, like, sort of, like, you know.
But still, it is a reasonable request.
But anyway, that someone got that hold of that book early through some inadvertent something, mm-hmm. and someone posted like an epic rant online about the end of that series. Which I'm going to be really honest, like if you couldn't see how that series was going to end, like early on, like I don't even know, like like you know. Okay, I'm going to ruin the Sookie Stackhouse series. You know she's going to end up with Sam, right? Like it's pretty obvious. Because there's this whole thing, like,
right.
about how, like, there's, like, she can't, like, because Charlene Harris writes these books where, like, the end game is, like, marriage and babies. And there's, like, only one character that she can, like, get married to and have babies with. Right?
Right.
Like, it's gotta be one of the shapeshifters.
Yeah.
And by that point, there's only one of them left.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. But anyway, someone posted a pretty epic and amazing rant about how they invested. I mean, because that would be, if that came out every, how long did that series run?
A long time. I mean, I didn't even start reading it until at least, like,
I think there were five or six books out when I started reading
it. Yeah, because I actually started reading it because True Blood was on HBO, which is based on that series, very lightly based on that series.
Very lightly
based.
The first book came out in 2001, and the last book came out. So for 13 years,
which is a lot of investment of time and money by a reader.
13 years,
yeah.
And so if you invest 13 years into reading a series, like I understand why you can feel like, you know, even if you know you should have seen that coming from a mile away, like if you feel like you invested, especially like in the whole like the Eric story arc lasts for many books.
Right.
Like, the sort of, you know, and then Bill is, like, at the beginning, sort of this, like, rambling, you know, the sort of rambling path to get to the end of the series, and it's, like, relatively unsatisfying vanilla ending. I understand. Like,
right.
I get it.
But, like, each of the book, I mean, each of the book has an arc where it's, each book ends.
It's like a mystery.
Like, these books, like, even though, like, the series, each, there's, like, continuity in the series, the books are not cliffhangered, if I remember correctly. There's not a cliffhanger at the end of each book. Like, Sookie is
alive and
with a romantic partner at the end
of
each book.
Yeah, and at each one of them, Sookie's like, because Sookie's not real bright. And at the end of each one, Sookie's like, and now everything's going to be fine. And it's like, oh, Sookie. You are so dumb.
And then, like, 2 days later,
and
when the next
you're
book
you're telepathic,
starts, yeah.
so she'd be able to tell these things. but, I mean, people went pretty crazy. Like, I just did a quick Google about the ending of this particular series, and it says this is from the Tulsa World, which is a newspaper in Oklahoma. The final book in Charlene Harris's best-selling series about telepathic waitress Sookie Stackhouse provoked such an outcry that some fans sent her death threats and curses. Okay, who sent someone?
What?
Like, someone put a curse on her?
Oh.
That's messed up. But after spending the past 15 years writing about the intrepid small-town Southern girl, whose adventures have featured a host of supernatural beings, Harris says she has no regrets. It's interesting, and I also wonder what influence this TV series also has on those expectations, mm-hmm. too, because I'm sure, like, I think I found the books through the TV series, or maybe I'd read one, and then, like, picked up the second when I heard it was being made into a TV series.
I think the first season of True Blood was out, was done when I started reading the series.
Yeah, and I wonder because on the TV show, like, Eric is such a compelling love interest for Sookie.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, like, the actor is obviously really hot.
Freaking gorgeous.
Yeah. And, like, he's still charismatic. And, right. You know, like, so there's that. I wonder how much influence, like, just people who discovered the series through the TV show also, and sort of to know that, like, in the other world of Sookie that is having this, like, honestly, the actor in, no offense to Sam fans, the actor who plays Sam in True Blood is kind of a drip. And he's kind of an annoying character. Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot. I wonder what that plays as well.
Right. I mean, speaking, though, of series where, thank God, it's ending True Blood. After
I didn't watch this next, last, yeah, I did not watch this it, last season.
I'm pretty sure that this upcoming season is the seventh and the last one, and that series really does need to end. I'm not sure what they're going to do, how they're going to do it,
well,
but it really needs to
happen.
The
previous season to this one, I was just like, because I am an idiot, I did recaps of each episode.
Yes,
snark caps. They started as recaps, became snark caps. They were such a freaking disaster. Like, I mean, the stuff that happened, like, the with the werewolf pack and the, like, I don't even know what Alcide's purpose is on that show. I mean, there's just, I mean, I know his purpose is to walk around shirtless, but he's got, like, got that greased up wax chest thing happening. I mean, it's just a, God, it's just a hot mess. But, man, that needs to, like, that thing needs to be, like, done.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing that happened with Bill, like, when he emerged from the, like...
Yes, yeah.
The goo, like, not this most recent season, but the season before, I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm breaking up with True Blood. Like, the goo emergence was, like, that was my limit. I just couldn't do it. I really couldn't. That was disgusting and stupid at the same time. Like, those two things don't usually sort of, like... get mashed up. But that was... It was disgusting and stupid.
It was disgusting. And stupid, yes.
It really
I agree
was.
On both counts.
Yeah, oh, that show. It used to be so entertaining. But I was... When we were also talking about this, I was ranting to Laura about how J.J. Abrams can't end series. Like, and... Because you know,
right.
We look at, like, Felicity, Alias, Lost, Fringe... I don't know what other series.
They all ended really badly, all of them?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Like, the last seasons of all of those series ended terribly. And we were talking before we started recording about, like, how he doesn't... For me, it seems like his shows don't have... When they start, there's not a real clear idea of what the end game is. And, you know, I mean, like, Alias, which I really loved, like, the first couple seasons, and then
right.
Jennifer Garner met Ben Affleck, and she'd been dating the guy who was playing the love interest on that show, so then they quit being in scenes together, and there was some ugliness, you know.
Was that, what, Michael Vartan?
Yes.
Yeah. He's pretty hot.
He is, actually.
Anyways. I know his name because he's hot,
he
and I
is.
Associate that, you know?
Anyway, but the last season of that show was just, like, such a mess. Like, just, it didn't, like, the main characters were never in the scenes together. Like, nothing made any sense. It was just, a mess. And, like, with Fringe, I am still, because that's kind of raw still for me. Right. Because that been, you know, which was a really, such a good show. And I really loved Olivia in that show. And she had such an interesting story arc. And then the final season was all about John and Peter. And Olivia's character kind of became this character. She didn't even talk that much in the last season.
That's gotta be frustrating.
It's really frustrating. And not that I don't, I love John and, why am I calling his, the actor's name is John, Walter and Peter, in that, like, their relationship is so interesting and so compelling. Right. Like, it's a really important story, but to give that relationship closure and to not really, and to sort of have Olivia be sort of in the background moping didn't make any sense. Like, it was very unsatisfying. I still haven't watched the last episode. Like, I'm just, like, so mad.
Yeah.
And, like, Lost, like, I mean, how long ago did Lost end?
And, like, people are still mad.
People are furious about, like, the ending of Lost. And I get, like, I don't think those feelings are, like, illegitimate.
Right. Especially with television, the way, in a way, even though you're in your living room watching this, it's also kind of a community thing, especially with the way Twitter and people, the way watch it together and comment on what's going on together. Yeah. And the way the marketing is that they want to encourage that community. And I think some of the marketing around Veronica Roth's trilogy was centered on creating this community. Well, when you make somebody feel like they're part of a community, and this is something that happens in sports fandom also, where they're just like, you're the 12th man, or you're the 6th man.
You're the 6th man.
We totally value you. You are so important. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be here without you guys. You know what I mean? So when you give people that feeling like they matter, when you do something, it's almost like it to hurt their feelings in a way.
Yeah, I think they feel like they're going to be a backlash.
Yeah, it feels like it's a betrayal. It totally does. So when you do something, when you give people the sense of community and ownership, and you do something that really upsets a lot of them, it does feel like a betrayal.
Right.
And there's going to be a backlash, you know, you as an author or creator has totally the right to do whatever they want, whatever they think is best creatively. That's totally fine. Yeah. But at the same time, like, when the marketing company encourages that ownership, like, you can't be like, you read that book wrong. You know what I mean?
And that's where I think it... Yeah, and I think that's where, like, it almost feels like we can't... And it's gotta be frustrating from an author perspective, too, because they're told they need to engage, 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 so they do all this, like, engagement, whatever that means.
Right, and then
the people they're engaging with maybe aren't, behave in a way that's, like, I mean,
totally inappropriate, you know?
Or, you know, if they're angry, and it's like, well, how do you even, I don't know how you would respond to that, like, if you felt like you had done right by your characters, and, you know, fans are angry, like, I don't know how, and you were told, well, to be successful, you need to be engaging, you need to be online, you need to be, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
That's got to be a really difficult...
Well, and to put them in a position where they feel like they have to justify something that they put a lot of heart and creativity and work into, I mean, that's got to be so frustrating. I mean, I don't even know what it would be like to be in a position to have to, like... justify something like that.
It would suck.
Yeah. It would totally suck.
It would really suck. And
But that's kind of the position that these authors are put in, whether that's fair or not, you know.
Yeah, and it's because I can see both, you know, the both sides of it, and it's a really sticky situation.
Yeah.
And I don't think that you can discount, like, the importance of, I don't know, I can get all lectury, but, like, the Divergent series marketing was so fan-driven.
Right.
And, like, so I really get why people are angry, you know? I really get that. I think some of their behavior has been wholly inappropriate and despicable.
Very inappropriate and despicable,
But, I mean, in terms of, like, your sort of average person, because, you know, that's, I get it. And I mean, I don't know... You know, and I assume we're just going to see more and more of that, like with
things especially with the way the internet is, where it's so easy for people to express how they feel about something.
Well, and then look at like people who did the Kickstarter for Veronica Mars,
right?
Like, what if they're not happy with the Veronica Mars movie,
right?
You know, and they literally feel like they're investors, even though like I can get on a Kickstarter thing because like it's an investment model, but it's not regulated, right. But like. Anyway,
that's a whole different issue.
But like, people feel like they actually are investors in that movie, and so they have a certain expectation of what they're going to get out of that film. You know, and some people will be disappointed, and feel like their investment, I'm doing air quotes again, wasn't good value,
right?
And that's like, and that gets even stickier. And I'm sure we'll see more and more of this. Where it's, even more actual investment in a creative product. I mean, because musicians are doing that too, where, Kickstarters and the like for albums so they can go independent, all that stuff.
Right.
I don't know, it's a hard thing because then it's like how much of that creative output is fan driven and like, that's going to be hard for people who are creating things to feel like they can still be true to what they're making and also fulfill the sort of agreement, whether it's like in a formal way, like something like Kickstarter
with a record company
in an informal way, just sort of their agreement with their sort of relationship with their fans. It's really sticky.
But I think it gets to a point where things, when they have a really big fan base, or even if it's not a big fan base, but any fan base, where fans do feel like there is an agreement, and I feel like I've seen this so many times with new albums that come out from bands where a band either they haven't changed their sound that much and they've kind of stuck with what works for them.
And maybe
that's just creatively what they wanted to produce, or whatever it is. And then a lot of times I feel like they get criticized for, not branching out or doing the same old thing, but some fans are really happy with that. But then a band will change their sound. They go through something. They come up with new creative ideas that change their sound.
Just age and
then
people,
they just get a different perspective on what they want to put out into the world, which is totally awesome to me and valid either way. But people get angry and they're just like, well, you sold out. And you've changed,
I thought it was interesting, you and I were talking about this a while back, when Justin Timberlake came out with his album earlier this year, and
that's a really fascinating thing to look at.
Yeah, and he got a lot, there was 8 years between his, or seven years between his two albums, and...
Which is quite a time.
Well, he was also doing his whole acting thing, air quotes, but I mean, that's a lot. That's like goes from, him being in his 20s to in his 30s. Like, that's a big,
that's a big transition.
And he got married and, all the stuff that happened in that time period. And like that album was, pretty different from his previous album, which was more of a like sort of dancey, younger sound. And the newer one was more of a neo soul, older sound. And he got a lot of criticism for that, for going in that direction. And I actually really love that album. And I think that
you love anything by Justin.
No, but I actually really love that album. Like that particular album, I really like that one. And Justified are my favorites, for really different reasons.
Right.
But like, I really love that album. Like it's one that actually it's like one of the few albums I like listening to, like, all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of, like, on shuffle with other stuff.
Didn't Josh get mad at you about this?
About the...
The constant loop?
The loop, yes,
the Justin Timberlake loop playing?
Yes, he did. whatever. Anyway, I just really like that album. And, but he was really... He's smarter than he lets on, too, Justin Timberlake. Like, he's... And I know someone who's worked with Justin Timberlake and has said he's actually very smart. So, which doesn't surprise me
at
all.
I mean, he's built this whole business. You're not
Justin
stupid
empire.
If you can do this.
No.
And it's not just somebody else telling you how to do it. Like, you've got to do that yourself in some ways.
And, but he said, you know, because his sound is, he's like, I can't make music for teenagers anymore. Like, if teenagers like what I'm making, that's great. But I am in a different place in my life, and I want to be making music for, like, my peers. And, like, yeah. He's like, I want, like, you know, like, I think about my audience, and it's like, I want, like, a 40-year-old to be, like, grooving to my song, because, like, those are more my people at this point. And, like, I'm totally paraphrasing, like, but that was, you know, and I thought that was a really interesting insight, because in his mind, his audience has grown with him.
Right.
And in the critic's mind, his audience has stayed the same age.
Right.
And, like, that's an interesting sort of rub, too, is, like, where does the, you know, how the audience will transform, but as, like, you know, the sort of external forces don't necessarily see that either. It was really interesting. I just thought that was such an interesting observation. Oh, God, now I'm using interesting too much, too.
Yeah, but it reminds me a lot of what Sarah Dessen was saying. She did a podcast recently with Sarah Zarr, which is a really, that this Creative Life is Sarah Zarr's podcast, and it's really great, and I highly recommend it. But they did a podcast together, and Sarah Dessen mentioned that slowly her characters have slowly kind of been getting older.
Yeah, because in her first books they were about 15.
Yeah, and she just, like, you know, I don't know if it's something about not being able to identify with the mind of a 15-year-old. And don't quote me on this. Go just listen to the podcast.
Yeah, so I haven't listened to that episode yet, but
it's really good.
I love Sarah Zarr's podcast.
Yeah, and but she just, like, you know, I just find myself maybe just being able to get into the head of this person who's a little bit older now, and that's just what is happening. This is how my work is evolving. You know, but as far as reader expectations go, she's definitely one of those authors where I feel like readers have come to expect a certain thing, and she definitely kind of changed it up with this most recent book, which is The Moon and More, and people have not been very pleased.
There's
a lot of people who have not been very pleased, you know, and there are a lot of people who do love this book, and rightfully so, either way, you know, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, that's...
But I think people are very mad because she went away from what was, in some ways, her normal form, her normal Sarah Dessen formula.
And my understanding is, and I wish I could remember where I'd read it, but that people are really unhappy with... Have you read Lock and Key by her?
No, I have not.
That was a book... I guess she wrote that book when she wasn't really... No one was really expecting her to write a book, because I think she just had her baby or something along those lines. And it's a bit darker than her usual... I mean, because she explores some pretty, like heavy issues, but a lot of times, like, those things don't generally happen on the page in her books. Like, they're things that have happened in the past.
Right.
And in that book, there's some pretty intense stuff that happens on the page. And that's my mom's favorite of her books. And it's definitely, got a different tone. And, I know that's one a lot of people don't like of her books as well. And it's sort of interesting how, like, sure, she goes in
people
these other directions.
Come to,
and it's like, if it's not the truth about
and,
forever, just listen along with it, which, you know, I love all those books.
Right.
But that's got to be creatively a challenging. I'd love to have someone on the podcast who could talk about that.
Yeah.
Actually, but that's got to be creatively a challenging thing to do, is to sort of balance that.
Yeah. Well, and it has to be really frustrated to feel like your fan base won't stick with you because creatively you are ready to do something different.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I wonder how often sometimes those forces actually influence the output, too, because there's some authors that I won't pick on anyone in particular, whose books I've sort of gotten tired of because they've been kind of the same, like, the same thing every time. And, like, I sort of wonder, like, how much pressure, you know, whether from, you know,
financial things that have to come into play once in a while, with,
like,
this sort of thing.
I mean, I sort of, like, Raquel from the Book Barbies is going to reach the internet and strangle me, but I'm like, Julie James's books, which I really enjoyed some of them. she's been writing this one series for some time now. I think she's on, like, the fifth book or something in this series. And, like, it's at the point where I feel like they're all exactly the same with just sort of different characters.
Uh-huh.
And, like,
which is how I kind of felt about Sookie Stackhouse, which is why I stopped reading them. Because it just felt like the same thing was happening.
On their own. And, like, she's really good at writing dialogue and writing, you know, vivid settings and, you know, engaging plots. But the characters, in many ways, there's no... I can't tell you who's who in what books. Like, I'd totally mess it up.
Right.
Unless we were talking about her first two books. Because those are very different from the rest of her series. Like, I think you would probably like her first two books mm-hmm. and not like the rest of her books. But I wonder, you know, how much sort of that comes from forces outside of the author, too, where there are... expectations that need to be met.
Right.
And that's, you know, especially when success can be like a kind of shitty thing sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, like it can be limiting. I mean, not like woe is, you know, like not like, oh, the poor successful people, but.
Right. I
mean,
sometimes success comes with maybe something that you weren't personally happy with, that this, maybe this book or this album or something wasn't really what you wanted to produce creatively. The result for you as the artist didn't meet your expectations. But for some reason,
it still really speaks
to people. So people are like, I want more of that, more of that. And then you as the artist are like, no, I didn't really like doing that, or something like that. I could totally see how that would be really, really difficult to deal with.
Yeah, so when we were just, we were thinking about as well that had that same, that same issue is Sarah Zahra's most recent book, which is another one of those where we can seem to relate to everything, which is the Lucy Variations. Because that was such a departure for her on a number of levels, which, you know, with the point of view, and then you were
being
saying this social
class
issues. Because Sarah Zahra tends to write, or she doesn't tend to, all of her other books have been from the perspective, you know, in first-person point of view, from the perspective of generally, like, economically disadvantaged characters, which
right.
I really appreciate that she tackles that in a way that's actually real.
Right.
Because there are a lot of times that that doesn't happen in an authentic way.
Right.
Like, the aforementioned Katie McGarry's books, to be honest. in the Lucy Variations, it's in the third person, and Lucy is a very wealthy,
right.
like, astronomically wealthy, and I... and, you know, I understand why, honestly, I don't think that's a book for everyone. Like, I really don't. Like, I think there's, it's, because it is a different, it's an odd book. Like, it's a different sort of story. And I think it's, like, one of those, I happened to read it when I really wanted to read something that was different. Like, I was feeling, like, a little, I was, like, feeling like I kept reading the same thing. Oh, you know, like, there's just, like, you kind of get in those ruts. Like, it was also when I had just a slew of review copies of books, and it was, like, every single one of them seemed like the same story. So, when I read that one, it was just, I was desperate for something that was, like, different. And so, like, at that time, that book was, like, exactly what I needed to read.
Right.
Which I don't sort of discount, like, that sort of, you know, when you read things can have a really big impact on what you think of them, but
but Lucy in some ways is going through what we're talking about, where she's dealing with heavy expectations about her creative and her musical life and career, and she has to figure out how she wants to deal with, you know, this gift that she's been given as a piano prodigy, and what kind of piano player she wants to be. As far, you know, because she's
and
done
like
the competition
role,
circuit,
yeah, like
which
what
is
role,
very hardcore.
What role does she want that to play in her life?
Right.
Like, that's...
And, you know, she
Man,
has to deal with
a lot.
Man,
that looks like
a
metaphor
yeah.
for this whole podcast.
I was just thinking that.
Like, wow. Mind blown.
I was like, I wonder if this is, like, what Sarah Zahra was, like, talking about in this whole book was just a metaphor
it's
for, like...
It's kind of like, oh, man,
author
that's,
versus
like,
versus reader
totally,
expectations.
Yeah.
It's gotten very meta now, you know?
Like, whoa, that's... But it's true. I mean, it really is. It's... And I... Yeah.
Oh.
All right, I lost my
Did you have anything
again.
Else you
I, you know,
to
I had
or?
Something else stuck in my head, and I guess can't draw it out, but I can't, It's sort of, I think, something I want to revisit at some point in more digging into the way that books are marketed and, like, right. the way, like, in a lot of ways, like, the success and failure of books is increasingly being sort of, the marketing puts that on the readers, like, with the pre-order campaigns and all of that stuff.
Right.
It's interesting how that, and I know it's primarily in, like, digital marketing, not, you know, real marketing, which are two different things. Real sounds bad. But, like, bookstore marketing is very different than, like, digital marketing. And, you know, with things like the pre-order campaigns and, like, mm-hmm. Put the widget on your Facebook and right. change your Twitter profile to this book cover and, like, this sort of, like, putting this onto, the reader, it's actually something I'm really uncomfortable with, to be completely honest, mm-hmm. because I sort of feel like, it's
a way in which readers think that they have a piece of ownership
right,
over
exactly.
the thing that
like
they,
it's
just because you own, like, the hard copy of the book, or, you know, you have, like, you have it on your Kindle or something, it doesn't mean that you own the creative content.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think it's a
hard thing for people to grasp.
I don't think it's something that can be, like, underanalyzed, to be honest.
Right.
And I really do think this is going to become more and more of an issue, and I think we're
going to
see
totally
things,
going to.
Like,
yeah.
the Allegiant kerfuffle happen over and over and over again. And it's a side effect in a lot of ways of the way that books are marketed, particularly to people online, who I think have a different, people who are involved in online book spaces have a different relationship with books than people who are more casually invested in.
Right.
I mean, I really do. And I mean,
part of it is the community that kind of has started sprouting up around books.
Well, and it's related to things like fan fiction and the Tumblr stuff. I mean,
right.
it's just like there's so much related to, it's all, like, tangled up in this
right.
big old knot. And,
but, like, when I was growing up, I feel like I was like, oh, I didn't like that book. Ugh. Goodwill,
yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean,
like,
and then you move on, you know, and
yeah.
if you were really motivated, you write a letter to the author or something, you
yeah.
know what I mean? It's just, they build these communities, and they encourage these communities, and then sometimes the community just
gets
doesn't,
mad.
Yeah.
And it's, I do think there's, this stuff is gonna happen, and we see it on the blog when, like, there'll be old blog posts where someone is really pissed because one of us didn't like a book. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, I think we're about ready to wrap it up.
Yeah, my dogs are having a meltdown.
Sarah's got to get ready to go to class.
Yeah.
And
so, anyway, guys, we're going to revisit this topic in probably another form.
I hope to, yeah.
It would actually be interesting to talk to an author about this, too,
so,
at some point.
If any authors are listening and would be interested in discussing this with us further.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a sticky thing, too, because, like, authors don't have control of their marketing and,
right.
For the most part, and there's a lot there that I think would be worthy of some more exploration. So, anyway, we'd love to know what you guys think and sort of what are your expectations, particularly when you're reading a series or out of, like, a TV show that you're following and your expectations of the ending. Any of that kind of stuff, we'd love to hear from you. So, we would really appreciate it if you would maybe go, if you like this podcast, please rate it in iTunes or subscribe in iTunes or both. It helps us to show up in searches, so we really appreciate
right.
it.
D, all of the above.
Yes. All right. Thanks
all right,
so much,
thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Clear Eyes Full Shelves podcast. Be sure to check out our book reviews, recommendations, opinion, and all-around nerdy badassery at ClearEyesFullShelves.com or on Twitter at Full Shelves. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Until next time, Clear Eyes, Full Shelves, can't lose.